About our experience in San Mateo County and how we responded to the H1N1 flu last year, and how we wanted to make sure that language access was part of our coordinated public health response. So I talk a little bit about the challenges we faced and some of the lessons learned from the whole experience. Can everybody hear me okay? Yeah? So before I start, I just want to quickly acknowledge the other contributors to this presentation, many of whom are sitting here in the room, Suvas Patel, Larnie San Juan, and Dr. Scott Moore, who's our county health officer. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So I'm going to start off by giving you a quick profile of San Mateo County, especially with regards to language, a little bit about the language assistance services that we have in place in our county health system. When I say county health system, I'm referring to our county health department. The reason why I call it, or that we call it a county health system, is that we've merged with our county medical center, so now we're called a county health system. But for all intents and purposes, it's county health department. And a little bit about our H1N1 response, particularly our experience with hosting what we refer to as pilot vaccination clinics, and how we use that experience to really inform how we were going to plan and operate our mass vaccination clinics. And really talk about how we planned, how we operationalized language access into our county-run vaccination clinics, and some of the lessons learned from that whole experience. So San Mateo County is located in the San Francisco Bay Area. We're bordered to the north by the city and county of San Francisco, and to the south by Santa Cruz and Santa Clara counties. We have a population of over 712,000 people. Those areas up there on the map that are colored purple are basically our 22 cities and towns and are places in which our residents reside. And in terms of language, we have a very diverse population. Over 42% of our county speaks a language other than English at home, according to the 2008 American Community Survey. So it's a very diverse county in terms of language. More representative of that, more than 30 languages are spoken in the county. And at the San Mateo County Health System, we've identified 5 priority languages based on the volume of limited English proficient or LEP clients that we serve. And for our system, those 5 languages are Spanish, Chinese, which includes Cantonese and Mandarin, Tagalog, which is the Filipino language, Russian and Tongan. And to the right of the screen, this is actually a sign that we developed that notifies our clients and the public of their right to ask for free interpretation services. It's something that we're committed to as an agency, and we've had this sign translated into the 14 most common languages in our county, including American Sign Language. And as I mentioned before, the provision of free language assistance services is a commitment that we formally instituted at the health system in the form of a policy. Our policy is called HSA25, which basically states that all clients have the right to free language assistance services, and that we have a responsibility to notify clients of that right, and that's why we developed the sign that I showed you in the previous slide. And this policy is really consistent with a number of federal and recently passed state standards or laws, specifically around language access. As Peggy mentioned, the CLASS standards, that's been around for more than 10 years now, out of the Office of Minority Health and the Department of Health and Human Services. And in California, in January of 2009, we recently passed Senate Bill 853, which actually requires the provision of free language assistance services by health plans to LEP enrollees. So based on this, as a result of this policy that we instituted, we developed a number of language assistance resources in-house at the San Mateo County Health System. We have a central language assistance line. It's a phone number that health system staff can call in order to access in-person interpretation services, document translation services, over-the-phone interpretation services, or even rent interpreter equipment for community meetings or group meetings. Our medical center, which kind of operates under their own wing, they actually use a video-based interpreting system that's different from our system. It's called the Healthcare Interpreter Network, and it's a bunch of video units that they can access at the medical center and all other clinics in the county. And for more immediate, short-term needs, we actually have a really diverse group of bilingual staff that we're able to tap into when we need to. So in terms of H1N1 response in our county, the real peak of activity took place between May of 2009 and February 2010. We saw 570 cases, of which 10 were fatal. And in order to deal with the surge of cases that we were seeing, our health system moved into an incident command system structure in order to coordinate flu response. Is everybody here familiar with ICS? I can describe it a little bit. The incident command system structure is basically a system that you can activate in order to coordinate a response to a particular event. So at the top, you have an incident commander who is responsible for making all the decisions, and four supporting units that handle finance, logistics, operations, and planning. I think I got all those four. So we began running county vaccination clinics in December of 2009. A lot of this was in response to how many doses we were receiving from the state, and I'll go a little bit into that in the next slide. And we tried to collect demographic data when possible. Obviously, for our more large-scale clinics, it was a little bit more difficult, but we were able to do it for some of our smaller clinic, and the demographic data included race and ethnicity. So our pilot, what we call our pilot vaccine clinics, we held six pilot vaccine clinics in December 2009, really because when we started receiving shipments of vaccine from the state, they were in limited batches, so we couldn't really do mass vaccination clinics. So instead, we decided to hold smaller scale pilot vaccine clinics, and we really wanted to use this experience to kind of inform us how we were going to handle or plan for mass vaccination clinics. What were the response needs that we had to address? What was the demand from the public? We scheduled five during the evenings, weeknight evenings, and one on Saturday. And we tried to anticipate having to serve or having to encounter limited English proficient individuals at these clinics and tried to staff accordingly. We had a number of bilingual Spanish speakers as part of the clinic staff and a few Tagalog speakers on staff. And we also made sure we have telephone equipment available just in case we had to access our over-the-phone interpretation services for the languages that we couldn't serve. So we roughly served about 960 recipients at these six pilot clinics. Each clinic averaged over 150 recipients. We saw a large limited English proficient clientele at those six clinics, mostly speaking Spanish, but a good number of them speaking Cantonese, Mandarin, and Tagalog. Language assistance was really critical for those LEP clients because they had a lot of questions, they were confused by the process, they needed someone to talk to in order to navigate them through the process. And for our clinic staff, it was also essential because they had to ask them questions about pregnancy status or other vaccine contraindication issues, very technical issues that are difficult to explain or even ask in English, let alone in another language. And what we learned from that experience, too, is that in-person language assistance was preferred. Although we had telephone services available, having a bilingual staff member available to navigate that process really contributed to a smooth process, really made it easier to communicate with the clients, and I think it just made the flow much more better. So this is the race ethnicity data that we collected actually from the six pilot clinics. And as you can see here, the majority of the recipients from the six clinics were either Hispanic or Asian. And this really validated what we were seeing on the ground as part of our clinic staff. We were encountering a majority of these individuals from the Hispanic and Asian communities were limited English proficient. So this kind of validated what we were seeing on the ground. So based on our pilot clinic experience, with regards to language access, we really recognized two things. One, that language assistance was really needed at all the clinic sites. But two, and most importantly, we really need to increase our capacity for in-person language assistance. So providing more bilingual staff or even contracting with health interpreters. And so that's kind of what we did in planning for our mass vaccination clinics. As we started getting more vaccine doses from the state, we decided that it was time to schedule mass vaccination clinics out in the community. We scheduled 26 clinics between January and March of 2010. And really to ensure that language access services or language assistance services were available at all the clinics, our incident command structure sections had to really work in a coordinated effort. Our finance unit had to find ways to pay for the resources to be in place. Our logistics unit had to plan for scheduling the interpreters or scheduling the bilingual staff to be in place. Operations, how would these assistance resources interface with the clinic staff or interface with the building, et cetera? And planning, identifying how or where these resources would be located and making sure that those resources were available at each of the clinic sites. So we really mobilized three forms of language assistance at the mass vaccination clinics. We tapped heavily into our bilingual staff, both clinical and non-clinical. We had a wealth of staff who spoke Spanish, who spoke Cantonese Mandarin, and who spoke Tagalog, and we wanted to make sure that those language groups at the very least were represented, since we saw a large group of them in our pilot sites. For those clinics where we couldn't schedule bilingual staff, we actually hired interpreters to staff those clinics and train them to work with our staff so that they can be gatekeepers and navigators through the process. And we also made sure that there was telephone equipment available at all the vaccine sites, either hardline or cell phone, so that we can access our over-the-phone interpretation service. Already, huh? I'll speed up. So just some logistical considerations when coordinating bilingual staff, health interpreters, and over-the-phone interpretation. These are just a few things that we had to consider. The two that I'll bring out are training and funding. Obviously, funding, we were very fortunate enough to get emergency preparedness money to pay for things like overtime for our bilingual staff or to hire contract interpreters. But training was also an essential component. We needed to train our clinic staff on how to interact with the bilingual staff or how to interact with the interpreters, and we also had to train the interpreters on how or what on what material we wanted to present and what were the main messages that we wanted to present. When it came time to assigning the bilingual staff and the interpreters, we tried to strategically assign them based on the anticipated language needs of the site. In San Mateo County, language tends to be clustered by geography. So for example, in the north, there's a heavy Chinese population that speaks Cantonese and Mandarin, there's a heavy Filipino population that speaks Tagalog, and a sizable Spanish population. So we assigned bilingual staff and interpreters who spoke those languages to those sites. And finally, or not really finally, but in terms of clinic feedback, the presence of language assistance resources were very well received by both the public and by the staff. It made communication and it made the process much more smooth. They were able to go through the clinic in a much more fast way than if they did it over the phone. Clients were also more comfortable and receptive when they were receiving information in their native languages, so that really facilitated communication in that sense. And one thing that we didn't expect was that the presence of language assistance resources and how comfortable LEP clients felt at the clinics led to them referring their family members or friends to come to the clinics and getting vaccinated as well. So there's an outreach component to that. So finally, our key lessons learned. Based on our whole experience, we really realized that language assistance is something that must be formally incorporated at the earliest stages of public health planning and response. There was no possible way that we could have coordinated the number of bilingual staff that we tapped into, the number of health interpreters that we tapped into, if we didn't think about this at the earliest stages, and certainly not in the middle of a mass vaccination response. For us, it was very beneficial to have established access mechanisms for language assistance resources. We have a central access line by which our staff can access in-person interpreters and over-the-phone interpretation services. So that's a very strong tool that we have in place in order to access language assistance resources. And for bilingual staff, I mean, we're a relatively small health department, so the matter of just knowing who speaks a different language in the staff goes a long way so that we can actually ask them to help out at one of the clinics. That staff, and another key lesson learned was that staff training is absolutely essential when it comes to how to access language assistance resources, but more importantly, how to work with limited English proficient clients. And this is something that we tend to overlook in preparing for responses. Is the clinic staff well-trained in cultural competency or well-trained in working with limited English proficient clients so that they can facilitate much better communication? And finally, for our county, this is more of a wish, we really need accurate language data for our county. It's the kind of information we may get from the federal government or the state isn't granular enough for our purposes. I mean, we have a number of different Asian ethnicities in our county. So having very descriptive, very specific, and very accurate data for us would go a long way in planning out our response in the future. And thank you very much, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Joe?
Yes.
Thank you.
For our bilingual staff, is that for the bilingual staff that we asked to? So what I didn't mention is actually there was a pilot project going on at the same time as this response happened, in which we were training bilingual staff to serve as basic interpreters. They received a 20-hour curriculum training using the Bridging the Gap curriculum out of the Cross-Cultural Healthcare Program in Seattle, Washington. So they received some basic training in interpreter and translating techniques. So to answer your question, yes, we did. But I think it was just lucky that that happened at the time that we were going through this response. Yes? I'm sorry? Awareness of the vaccination clinics? Yes, actually, we did a massive outreach campaign. We had educational brochures. Our clinic schedules were released, and they were actually translated into our five priority languages, which were Spanish, Chinese, Russian, Tagalog, and Tongan.